If you like to gamble, I tell you, I'm your man. Welcome to Music Weekly from Guardian.co.uk. I'm Paul McInnes, the gambler. And on the forthcoming emission, we'll poke around in LA's arty underbelly with Nightjaw. We'll chat about new music from teenagers in Tokyo, Washed Out and Editors. Will have your face back. And we'll have a very, very special feature with no name from Richard Hawley. But first, clean out your ears. It's time for Q-Tip. That was Make It Work by Q-Tip, our first guest this week. Q-Tip, born Jonathan Davis, now Kamal Ibn John Farid, was the frontman for A Tribe Called Quest. Perhaps one of the most influential groups in hip-hop, Quest were known for their progressive lyrics and jazz-inspired sound. After five albums, the group split up and Q-Tip went solo, releasing a clubby album, Amplified, in 1999 and last year's critically lauded The Renaissance. In 2002, however, Tipper recorded another album, Kamal the Abstract, which never saw the light of day. Not until now, that is, as it was finally released this month. It's an album that's more adventurous than either of his others, bleeding in between hip-hop, soul and jazz, and with a lot of extemporization. I got the chance to speak to Q-Tip about the album over the phone last weekend, and I started by asking him how he thought it sounded 7 years down the line.
It holds up. It really does. It doesn't sound dated to me. My ambition is to try to make a hybrid of some sort, just try to cross different genres with it and, you know, open people up to different mixing of a different genre.
I mean, what type of genres we're talking about here? Because a song like Barely in Love, I mean, it's almost like a Stones track, like something from
exactly.
Sticky Fingers or something.
Exactly. You really got that one, so... That's exactly what that is. It's like my Stones kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Did you ever think it would never come out? Did you have a point where you think, well, that's it, I'm going to have to put it to one side and forget about it?
No, I knew that eventually I'd get it out there. I kind of always felt that. When people started doing petitions online, you know, it started to become more of a groundswell around the record, and people started hearing it and finding out about it. You know, that gave me more of a conviction.
Okay, and how do you think it fits with your other two solo albums?
All three are really different. I try to be conscious of not doing something the same thing twice, you know? I don't want to be formulaic, so I try not to be, at least. And I don't think that any of them feel, you know, like they're the same.
I wonder whether you would ever make the decision to go back and make more music like Amplified, because you can almost see a trajectory from Quest through to Kamal and the Renaissance, that those jazz, that the live elements are there, but that would you go back and make a more pop oriented album again?
Yeah, I definitely want to make more of a soul kind of hip hop pop album, you know, which is what I'm shooting to do, something more funky pop, like real, but not pop like, you know, Lady Gaga kind of way, but just more popular, you know what I'm saying, like something that reaches a lot of people.
The band you play with are fantastic, and actually listening to Kamal, The Abstract, you can see a lot of connections between that album and the live show, the extemporizing, the trading off between different parts of the group. Do you feel that yourself?
I do feel that in a way, you know. I think it's important that when you have a band, that you communicate your relationship to each other on stage, you know, that there is just a connection. It's not just you standing up there rapping over a really tight band. There has to be a relationship that's exploited as well. You know what I mean? And I really try to do that. And I think I do that with some success.
It is that American spirit that binds us together in spite of our differences. There is not a liberal America and a conservative America. There is the United States of America.
Hip-hop is living. Make a clap with this. I wanna welcome y'all to this inauguration. So happy to see y'all vote across the nation. My opponent didn't want it cause he lost his grip, pandering to all the ladies by choosing a chick. He catches attitudes, he blows a fuse often because of all my eloquence. It's cool, they say I'm soft and picture that, showing y'all visions to see.
At the end of last year, you released that tune via the internet, the Q-Tip for President, and it was obviously a very special moment for a lot of the hip-hop community when Obama was elected president. How are you gauging the political situation now in the States?
It's quite heated at the moment, especially a lot of bipartisan joust that's going on. The conservatives are rallying right now to get their base going and eventually appoint somebody or get somebody who's going to lead them. Because, you know, it's just contentious between them and Obama, especially over the healthcare issue, over, like, the economy and stuff. It's, like, real hot issues that they're just going back and forth over. So, I think he's faring well, though, underneath the pressure. I think he's, you know, responsible and lucid and, you know, he seems to be holding his own. King shice the foul, and in these neighborhoods we need food to eat up, bailing out Wall Street. We can't pay to keep our heat up, letting issues be known on this microphone, giving me the presidency but not the throne. That means
do you think it's possible for liberals to kind of rally themselves in the way that the conservatives do, because you don't see many liberal
Tea
Parties?
They really should, but the problem with a lot of liberals is that they sometimes are too smug for their own good. And they feel like that they're just above, unless you're at the dire straits and you have to do everything. Like, you know, this past election, what he did was really good.
And what are you listening to outside of hip-hop? Because obviously, you know, the influences, as we talked about.
I like that new Muse record. I think it's good. I kind of like the earlier stuff, too.
Muse?
The Grizzly Bear, I like that. Or like, I guess I like the Black Keys. I like the new Jack White album he put out with his band.
The Dead Weather.
Yeah, I like that.
So that's some real grimy rock and roll stuff there. Are we gonna be hearing more? Because there's bits of that in both Renaissance and Kamal. We're gonna hear some more grimy guitars getting involved.
Yeah, but it's gonna get a little funkier and less rockier, I think.
Right. Well, that's great. I've got obviously I'm a huge Quest fan, and over the past few years, you and the group have reformed a few times to play some dates on the Rock the Bells tour, amongst other places. Would there ever be the chance of you reforming and coming and playing the UK?
Oh, yeah, I'm definitely going to come play the UK. I think, tried playing the UK, though? I don't know.
Well, have a think about it.
We haven't played there in a long time.
Have a think about it.
Maybe we'll come and we'll play the Wembley or something.
That sounds like a good deal. Well, Q-Tip, it's been great to speak to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate it.
That was Q-Tip on The Very Bad Line from New York. Sorry about that, folks. But Kamal the Abstract is available to buy now. I have some bad news, I'm afraid. Rosie Swash went to Copenhagen last weekend and came back with what I can only assume, given the Danish relationship with bacon, was swine flu. In her stead, however, I've only got the bloody A-team alongside me. To my left, Rebecca Hannibal Nicholson. And to my right, Tim B.A. Baracus-Jones. Tim, I actually spent a long time thinking about this, whether to call you Mad Dog Murdoch or B.A. Baracus. But I thought, given your new gym habit at BA, BA was probably better.
It's that's the one people normally go for when they see me.
Yes, indeed. Tim, I've got a question, actually. I want to ask you about that Q-tip interview, because he's a bit of a hero of mine. I'm quite happy to be speaking to him. But I couldn't escape the feeling that throughout the interview, he was wandering around basically making his breakfast as he was talking to me. Is that should I take that personally, or is that kind of one of the perils of the job?
I think with phone interviews, that kind of thing happens a lot. And I've noticed it, especially with rappers, actually. It's almost like they've got better things to be doing than speaking to some kind of UK no mark journalist.
Funny that, isn't it? But I mean, perhaps there's a way I can get my own back. Maybe, I don't know. Is there any way I can sort of redress the balance?
Well, I did a lot of my early phone interviews in my dressing gown because I was so disorganised. So maybe you can, you know, just think about, you know, they're thinking you're sat in an office. So just, you know, strip off and
let it all hang out.
Exactly.
All right. Well, on that tragic note, we best move on to Singles Club. This is the section where we listen to music and then chat about it for a bit. And the first piece of music up for chat this week is Washed Out with Belong. Let me see you why, let me see you why. Don't try to hide. Let me see you all, let me see you all. You're bound to fall, you're where you started from. That was Belong by Washed Out. Washed Out is Ernest Green, who comes from Columbia, South Carolina, and sounds like a baddie from a Cary Grant film. Well, his name does, at least to me. Like Rosie's Favs, Wavs, he's released his latest EP on cassette only, which is a great idea, unless you actually want to play the thing, I imagine. Tim.
This is my track.
It is indeed.
I've been raving about this. I'm absolutely obsessed with this guy. I think he's amazing. I've been trying to describe it to a lot of people and not done a very good job, because if you tell someone you've got this kind of lo-fi, chill-out, slightly reggae-ish surf person, it sounds like the worst music ever. And this track as well, which is one of his best tracks, sounds like Englishman in New York meets the Avalanches, and no one really wants that in their life. I think what I like about it is, you should never go off someone's MySpace spiel because it's normally, you know, self-promotion and load of rubbish. But he says he's not influenced by bands as much as, you know, the artists and filmmakers. And one of the people he references is Ryan McGinley, who's the photographer who made his name at Vice magazine, shooting kind of hazy photos of young people, quite often with no clothes on. And, you know, he's gone on to be a big name. And I think that aesthetic has influenced a lot of these kind of surf groups and lo-fi groups in California. You know, a lot of the music seems to be about celebrating youth, about, you know, just kind of stoner, slacker, you know, beautiful, kind of capturing those magic moments. And I think that's what this music does really, really brilliantly. It's really kind of trippy and quite, just really, really mellow and beautiful.
I think there's something, and a lot of the tracks we're going to talk about today and Night Jewel later on, there seems to be themes crossing between a lot of them. And we come back again to this wooziness that we've been talking about a lot with the noise pop and the C86 referencing bands. What I'd like to ask you, Rebecca Nicholson, and I'm only asking you this because you are our resident youthful person and not in any way because you're a rattled junkie. Is there anything, any kind of drug influence in here? And all these, where does this wooziness come from?
Maybe it's a reaction to the times. I don't know. Just get stoned and
forget it all.
Relax.
But is this to your liking?
It really is. And it's funny that I didn't know that Night Jewel was also on the show. And it reminded me a lot of Night Jewel, so that's strange. I didn't know it was recorded on tape, but it reminded me of the sort of tapes you might find in your dad's car, you know, that kind of thing. And all the people we've talked about already, that's kind of the tapes that my dad has got in his car. But it works, doesn't it? There's just something about it. It really, it makes me, and it also, it's funny that you mentioned Ryan McGinley, because it made me think very visually, I started thinking about pictures like his pictures, kind of blurry, sun-drenched, shots slightly out of focus and that kind of thing. I loved it. Loved it.
Yeah, for me, it all made me think of that. I mean, there's Balearic stuff again. So we come back to the aeroplane sounds, the Italians Do It Better stuff, which is where Night Jewel's records were first released in the UK. So it's all these lines are crossing over. But it did make me think of people like Christopher Cross and Michael McDonald as well. Those early 80s things who might be on your dad's cassettes. That is Washed Out with Belong, and you can listen to several of his tracks on his MySpace right now. Okay, next up is Isabella by Teenagers in Tokyo. That was Teenagers in Tokyo with Isabella. Teenagers in Tokyo come from Sydney, and their name is all one word, which means either that's the cool new thing, or the spacebar is broken on their computer. The band have recently relocated to London and are recording an album in Wales. Presumably Teenagers in Tenby didn't have the same ring to it. Rebecca Nicholson.
Yes, this is my one. Again, it's that same sort of thing, isn't it? Where it's slightly hazy and dreamy, although I think this is a little bit darker. This is like the end of the night rather than the beginning of it. But it sounds a bit like Blonde Redhead's last album, which I really loved. It sounds a little bit like Susie and the Banshees. It's got that kind of 80s, it's like a bit 80s goth, although I don't really know a lot about 80s goth, but this is what I imagine. If somebody said to me, what do you imagine 80s goth sounds like, I'd think it sounds like a bit like this. And it sounds like it was recorded in a basement. So not as lo-fi as Washed Out, which sounds like it was taped in a bedroom, but still that kind of quite lo-fi that kind of thing. But yeah, I very much like them. I don't know a lot about them apart from the Australian thing.
Well, they're working with Bat for Lashes producer on their baby, so you might I suppose by the time the album comes out it'll sound a lot less like it's been recorded in a basement.
Yes, possibly.
Or maybe a very classy basement, who knows. Tim?
Well, I think it's interesting that you mentioned Bat for Lashes producer, because I think I like the track, and I think if there's someone there who can add a bit of magic to it, they might be really great. I think my problem with it is, I know I've gone on about liking the lo-fi aspect of the last track, but with this, it doesn't seem to bring anything to it. And it's almost like I'm a bit sick of bands who sound a bit weedy, post-punk kind of recorded in basements. I think, you know, that's what you got from post-punk in the first place. And I'd like to see them do something a bit new with that template. A bit like how, you know, when The Rapture came out and they took Public Image, they took Gang of Four, but they updated it for the 90s or
early noughties.
It was early noughties, wasn't it, Rapture?
I also wonder where it goes, this track. I think it's got a really great outro. It changes up the rhythm. It brings the guitar start sounding like an ambulance siren, and the bass line really picks up, and it's really passionate. But the middle of it, I think, doesn't really progress. It doesn't really take you anywhere on a journey. I don't know. That's Isabella by Teenagers in Tokyo, and it's available for download now at backyard.co.uk. Final track on Singles Club is Papillon by Editors. That's Editors with Papillon. Papillon is the famous tale of life and escape from the Devil's Island prison off the shores of French Guiana in the Caribbean. It was made into a movie starring Steve McQueen and Dustin Hoffman. Some people would like to stick Editors on Devil's Island and turn it into a movie starring Horn and Corden. At least you tell Horn and Corden it was a movie, but really you just leave them on Devil's Island too. This is my selection. I've maybe kind of set this up in the wrong direction, seeing as I'm supposed to really like this tune, and I don't really like it. I'm putting it forward more in a spirit of journalistic inquiry. There are things I think are good about it. I do like the synth line. I like the fact they've managed to translate their gothy, moody elements into a more synthesized sound. However, I'm most interested in it, in the idea of these bands, and there's been a lot of them, from the Killers to the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, and if you really want to stretch it, Keen, who in their third or fourth albums kind of ditch the guitars or move away from what has become known as their sound and start incorporating more synthesized, more dancey elements into their music. And I wonder really why people do that, whether it is genuinely because that's the sound they find interesting and want to develop in, or whether it's feeling they've reached a limit of what they can do with the tools they already had. Tim?
I mean, they know how to write a good indie pop song, don't they? And that's the one thing they've always had going for them. I've never been a massive Editors fan, but I can see why they had commercial appeal. And this is the same. And they've moved on. Like you said, they've moved on. They were Joy Division, now they're kind of Spandau Ballet, to cut a long story short era. I don't know. To me, what you're saying about this synths and why have bands done this now, I think if a band's doing it now, it just shows a total lack of ideas to me. I find it quite depressing that every single band seems to think progression means referencing 1984. It's weird.
Yeah. Rebecca?
Yeah, it's Preston from the Ordinary Boys Syndrome, isn't it? And that didn't do very well for him. What was it, 100 and... It was somewhere...
We can safely say it didn't crash into the top 10.
But I felt sorry for him because maybe, you know, 6 months ago, he was like, I've got this great idea, I'm going to be a synthy pop star. And then, it's not even 6 months ago, is it? It's about a year ago now, maybe.
To be honest, it's 3 or 4 years ago when people first... You know, the Killers came out. They were one of the...
Yeah, I mean the Killers have kind of their last album was notable for it having fewer guitars than previously, okay. and more synths, and making that line, that melody line, the center of the song. But yeah, I mean it's hardly anything unique to this year, but it does appear to be a trend in that direction. What do we think to his voice? Is it because he's always had that? I mean, Ian Curtis-y kind of reference. It sounds like he's actually singing like Brandon Flowers to me on this song, though.
See, the first person that I thought of was Ridian from The X Factor. And I can't stop thinking about it now. That has ruined any kind of enjoyment that I could possibly get from this song, because that's all I imagine.
What has happened to Ridian?
Well, maybe he's fronting the editors, I don't know.
Now we know.
Interesting. Okay, well, maybe just in case we get too rude about editors, we'll leave it there. We want your reviews of this week's tracks from Editors, Teenagers in Tokyo and Washed Out on our blog at guardian.co.uk/musicweekly. Tell us what you think of this week's selections and these other tracks. What are out to buy now? I'm not your toy. LaRue, I'm Not Your Toy. Lou Barlow, Right. Fixing all the problems that you made in your own head. But it was not your fault but mine, and it was your heart on the line. I really thought Mumford and Sons, Little Lion Man. Deny, my dear. So I was left. Stornoway, Unfaithful. Inside, wish you could have died last night. All All right, well, thank you very much to Tim Jones for coming in and joining us today. You're off to conduct an important Rockula interview, so we best let you leave the studio.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Okay, right. That's it for Singles Club, which means it's time for Night Jewel. Right, that's Lover by Night Jewel. If I'm not wrong, Night Jewel were the first act ever to pop up twice on Singles Club. This Roxy Music cover made the second choice. And just listening to that clip now, you can hear how the sound developed by Romana Gonzalez has inspired other new bands around at the moment. Romana was in the country recently, and she spoke to R. Rosie, who started off by asking her whether she'd come from a musical background.
I mean, in the Bay Area, like, everybody's upbringing is fairly artistic because it's such a weird town. The arts are, like, very important to the parents there. So, like, I mean, before the extreme budget cuts in California, there was, like, huge arts programs in all the schools. And my mother was a dancer, so there was a lot of, like, dancing and music also, because my great aunt is a classical pianist. My father was a painter and stuff. So yeah, there was a lot of arts in my house.
Did you have any sort of formal musical training?
Yeah, I did. I wanted it. I requested it.
Oh, really?
When I was five. Yeah, I took voice lessons and piano lessons when I was eight, five.
So you wanted to? You had the little girl dream of being
a pop
star.
Oh yeah, I wanted to be some sort of something. I mean, I didn't even know. I don't think I knew what a pop star was then, but I really wanted to be a singer.
We couldn't consider you a pop star now, could we? Was that the...
No, I don't think so.
So the ambition changed.
That ambition changed. Yeah, it totally changed once I became a young adult.
Live in LA now. Did you go there because you'd heard it was a great place to live? Did you go there to study?
I actually heard it was an awful place to live.
Oh.
And that's why I went there, because I knew it'd be cheap. And I usually like to go to places nowadays that have bad reputations, because it means that you can make it good for yourself and that you don't have to be in some predetermined space, which is sort of how I felt New York was for me.
Oh.
It's a little bit of like... predetermined your lifestyle just before you even got there, and it was very expensive, and also there was just some amazing music coming out of LA at the time, and I wanted to meet those people.
Like who?
Like Ariel Pink and his like whole crowd of friends. Human Ear Music initially was the label that was releasing his stuff. It's now become like a nonprofit organization, mm-hmm. Human Ear. And they just have an array of artists who they're working with who I really like their stuff.
Your debut album is pretty hush. It's pretty hush hush. It's pretty restrained.
It's quiet, yeah.
Very quiet.
Yeah.
Why do you want to make music like that? Apart from the fact that it's very lovely, I have to say,
And
it seems to be going down well with people. But what's the eight track for someone that used to want to be a pop star and had a?
Honestly, I am so clueless. I really didn't have any sense that recording on an eight track was such a weird thing. My friend gave it to me, and a lot of the musicians I was surrounded by in Los Angeles were all using eight tracks and four tracks, and And I said, oh, I'll just record some things on this, you know, because Cole explained to me how to use it, and it seemed so simple, as opposed to when I went into studios and they were using Pro Tools, and it seemed very complicated, and nothing I could possibly understand. I'm not so good with technology, new technologies. Anyway, so I started recording on the 8-track, and I had no idea what I was doing, and many of those songs are on the album.
Really, the first meanderings on
yeah,
the 8-track.
I mean, I'd say like Bottom Rung was one of the first songs I ever recorded on 8-track, and that's, I mean, it's recorded really badly, but it's a good, I mean, it's a good song. I love it, and it's very heartfelt, even though it's recorded kind of poorly. A lot of the times, unless I really, really thought it out beforehand, a lot of the singing is just sort of, you know, I'll record a few tracks and then I'll just start like mumbling or humming over something, and usually words will appear depending on how, what note it is and how I want the voice to sort of, the timbre of it to sound, you know, just like when you're pressing a note on a keyboard and you're messing with the frequency, if you want it to sound, you know, thin or fat, you move your mouth to that association, and then words start to appear, and then, you know, words are part of your life and you start writing sentences around them.
How easy is it to sort of take that to live performance, take your songs? How have you found it?
It's been very difficult, but not that difficult. I mean, it's been very difficult for me to conceptualize, but not as difficult as certain things. Like, I don't have to have a live drummer, so I don't have to worry about that. I don't have much beyond electronics, so I can always, you know, simulate things. What I've had difficulty with is how to make myself present on stage, but also happy to play. And because the pop star thing used to be an aspiration of mine, but it no longer is, and what is more an aspiration of mine is to be a musician, I have to find the balance between being a musician on stage and being a front person. And that balance is just something I've recently gotten the hang of.
Well, that was Romana Gonzalez, aka Night Jewel, and you can find out whether she's got the balance between a musician and pop star right when she plays Glasgow, Edinburgh and London at the beginning of October, and the album Good Evening is out now. So, Rebecca, do you think we're giving Romana due credit here, or undue credit for being somebody who's actually been a little bit of a pioneer in this sort of area?
I don't know if she's the pioneer, because I can't place it on any sort of timeline. You know, sometimes it just happens, doesn't it, that people with a similar sound spring up at the same sort of time. But I do like her a lot. I'd like to see her live, because I'd like to know if she has got that balance between pop star and... I can't imagine what she's like on stage. I think I'm imagining a sort of Bat for Lashes thing, and I wonder if she is actually like that or not.
Yeah, yeah. Makes me think of that too, but also of Telepathy.
Yes.
And I don't know if you've ever seen Telepathy live, but they are the most inanimate performers I have ever seen.
There is a brilliant Telepathy video on YouTube of them performing at a modern art show in New York, and there's like one person there dancing. It's worth looking it up.
I'm sure it's a highly trendy person who's doing the dancing, but all the same. Okay, as trailed at the top of the show, it's time for a very special feature with no name this week. Alexis Petridis conducted an excellent interview with Richard Hawley in the pages of The Guardian this week. So we didn't want to cover the same ground, but we did manage to persuade the Sheffield Troubadour to give us a special feature of his own. And this is Richard Hawley on Bob Lind.
You might wake up some morning to the sound of something moving past your window in the wind. If you're quick enough to rise, you'll catch the fleeting glimpse of someone's fading shadow. Out on the new horizon, may see the floating motion of a distant pair of wings.
The way he influenced me is there's a brightness sonically to his music. But he always reminds me, don't be afraid when you're writing a song to say something quite simply at times without overcomplicating it and becoming too verbose or flowery. Is that actually you can nail it by just saying something very simple. And that's something that Bob always, he's always in the back of my mind. You know? I chase the bright elusive butterfly of love. You might have heard my footsteps. His music accompanied me throughout my life, you know, all his records. It took me years to find, he only made 4 studio albums, but it took me years to find them. Well, Elusive Butterfly was the first thing that I heard, but my favourite song of his is one called Drifter's Sunrise.
Well, the sun rises behind you when you walk a westbound road.
When I hear it, time just seems to stop. Your brain just goes into a different space completely when you hear music like that, I think. There's a magic to it. And I describe Bob's music, he's kind of like, if a teenager was writing, trying to be Bob Dylan, is kind of how it might sound. You know, there's kind of a naivety, but there's a world weariness at the same time. And he's not afraid to kind of be naive, I think, in his words. And I always, as a teenager at the time when I discovered it, it was like discovering some magic formula, you know. I think he came from Denver originally, or he moved to Denver. And then there was nothing happening there for him when he was very young. And he moved to Los Angeles and got involved in the folk scene there very, very early on. There's some quite brilliant pictures of him sat in the Troubadour, drinking with Neil Young and the Buffalo Springfield and some of the Birds and all these amazing characters from that period of time, you know, and he's kind of really central to it all, you know. I think he got some demo time with a label called Verve, and they actually released an album of his stuff later that were just demos that Bob actually hates, but it's one of my favourites. I don't know exactly what happened, but I know that he got involved with Jack Nitzsche, and then him and Jack used to share a house together. And he made the fantastic first album with Jack Nitzsche, and I think Jack did the first 2 records. Like Bob says, if anybody ever did a kamikaze on their own career, it was Bob, you know. He kind of spiralled out of control, I think, quite a lot with drugs and drink.
When you're thirsty and no one will fill your cup for you, and your well-dressed friends don't want you on their street, when you're so far down, the gutter looks like up to you. I will still be kneeling at your feet. I will still be kneeling at your feet.
Well, I think Truly Dewey's blues, that got regional play. But in America, the way that it works with radio, it's kind of like a big spiral. You sort of get them played in one place and then the next place plays it, and it builds and builds and builds like that. I mean, having had personal experience of that when I was with the Long Pigs, we got On and On played on every radio station in America. But you had to travel and build it up, you know. And I just don't think Bob was wired like that, you know. I think because in the end, I don't think he had a particularly great time with the music industry, which people who are of a sensitive nature very often don't, you know. It is quite brutal. And Bob, like Fred Neil as well, another great songwriter, they turned their back on it, you know, because it didn't do them any good. I'm just glad that he's back writing, you know, because his new stuff, I played a gig with him in the Luminaire, I think, in London a couple of years ago, and I just went down and just played a bit of guitar for him on a couple of tracks, you know. But when I was in the audience, stood there, he was one of the few artists, I think, that I've ever seen where his new stuff was better than his old stuff. You know, his lyrics had taken on quite a lot of depth. And not that that wasn't there before. But yeah, his new material's mind-blowing. You know, I wish someone had given him a record deal, I really do, you know, because I'd love to make a record with him. And I tried to get some interest in his new stuff, and it's proven to be quite difficult. You know? So anybody who's listening to this who's a Bob Lynn fan who happens to own a record company, please give me a ring.
You've got to try to see that it's gone for you and me, and there is no way to bring it back again. In a sad, unstable way, I love you more than I could say, but now it's locked in yesterday and must remain there. The gentle prisoner in the stall sometimes forgets the very one.
Okay, that was the great Richard Hawley on Bob Lind, and the feature with no name will be back next week, but you can buy Richard Hawley's True Love's Gutter right now. Onto the blog and Facebook. It's also a good thing about Facebook is you get people's real names. Fergus Elphinstone said, what a combo. He was referring to last week's guests of The Very Best and Major Lazer. I just went weak at the knees. Very nice. SV80 on the blog, meanwhile, said, fantastic podcast. Kept it short and sweet there. Calicuta, meanwhile, this is where the anonymity of the blog comes in handy. He or she had to say about last week's show, you need to take ecstasy and cocaine before you think that this is music. The audience are sheep. They follow what is written in the big papers who are sponsored by record companies with no sense of music or taste, just money. Finally, back on Facebook, Matt Wilson said, you make me smile. I certainly know which of those last two comments I will choose to remember. Okay, that's all for this week. Thank you so much, Rebecca Nichols, for coming in. One, at short notice, and two, doing back-to-back pods.
That's quite all right. I'm happy to be here.
You may not know that it's a real feat of endurance, and you've just pulled it off with a pod.
Really? So, I am quite tired now. I feel like I need a rest. So.
Great. All right. Well, we'll be back next Friday, hopefully with a swine flu-free Rosie Swash. But until then, take care. Post all your thoughts on Facebook or on the blog, and we'll see you on Friday. Bye-bye.